الغفان الله هو ذا الرحمن الله هو ذا المنان لا اله الا الله.
Please send us your emails through our email, which is englishradio@irib.ir.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. We're welcome to another episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. I am Atta, the host of this program. We have Brother Suhail as the guest speaker from the Islamic House of Qom to answer today's question. Assalamu alaikum, Brother Suhail. Welcome to the show.
Oh, alaikum salam. Thank you for having me in the show.
Okay, Brother Suhail, the Muslim and the Shiite ones are waiting for the reappearance or the zuhur of Imam Asr, Imam Zaman. Whether it is considered a specific time for the reappearance of Imam Asr? First, the question is this, that is there any specific time for the reappearance of Imam Asr or not? Are there any barriers on the way of reappearance of Imam Asr, and what are they?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So, in regards to the reappearance of the Imam, we have seen a lot of narrations that say anyone who says or specifies the time of the Imam is qadhib, is a liar.
Mm-hmm.
You see, anyone who states anything,
yes,
apart from that his appearance, inshallah, is soon, nobody can come and specify when that appearance is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so in that sense, we know that we can not specify the time of the appearance.
The timing is not clear.
Yeah, the timing is not clear.
Mm-hmm. So the timing is not clear, but the reappearance is for sure happening.
Yeah, the reappearance is for sure. We have traditions that say that if there is no Imam in this world, the world would be chaotic and it wouldn't be a place for anyone to live in.
Mm-hmm.
Because it needs someone to balance the weight between good and evil in this concept of having an Imam. And even we have traditions that say that there are going to be 12 companions or 12 Imams after me from the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him. We have another tradition is that even if the day of judgment is supposed to reach today or tomorrow, for example,
yes,
Allah will extend this day into a limited period where the Qaim would come, rule, govern, and make sure the Haq is separated from the batil.
Mm-hmm.
The right is separated from the wrong, and it's clear for everyone to follow the right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Are there any interfering factors that postpone the reappearance of Imam Asr? Or no, they are just made up stories in the minds of the people. For example, do not do this, do not do that, the reappearance of the Imam will be postponed. Is it so?
So normally there is a general view,
mm-hmm,
and the specifics are normally related to this general view. You see, we have a quotation from Sheikh Tusi,
mm-hmm,
that says the cause of the obstacle in the reappearance of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam is nothing but the fear of being killed. You see, because if there had been any other reason, his remaining in occultation would not have been justified. You see, but there are many reasons for him not appearing right now. One is that the people are not ready, and people do mistakes that are already there in history,
mm-hmm,
you see. So we recite in one of the ziyarat, if I'm not mistaken, this is the verse, Nusrati lakum ma'adda,
mm-hmm,
you see, where we say, oh Imam, we are ready for you, you see. But the problem is that we say that, but when the Imam comes, what is going to happen? Like, let's say Imam is here right now when I go outside, and Imam comes and he says, Aghaya Suhail, you say that you are ready to give me your support,
mm-hmm,
you see? Now I'm here. What support can you give me?
Yes.
You see? A lot of issues is that people do not ponder on when they recite this kind of quotations or verses or hadith, that what does being ready mean? Mm-hmm. You see, we know that the Imam is going to come. We know that there's going to be a war. We know that he's going to have an army of approximately 313 people, like the companions of Badr.
Yes.
We know all of that. But in an army, we need fighting men. Are we exercising ourselves for the sake of Imam? You see, he needs people that are strong. Are we exercising to be able to be strong? He needs political people in his group to be able to analyze policies for his army.
Mm-hmm.
We need people who are smart. We need people who are learned. A lot of questions that are attached, maybe they are not from Ahadith, but they are logical concepts that we see that Imam requires these people in his ministry.
Yes.
And if he's not able to find these people, then his team wouldn't work as it's supposed to work. So people need to work on that aim and agenda. So for example, right now, you'll see a lot of people that are marrying in marriage. We see that people do not want kids. They say that they want to have fun, they want to enjoy, and maybe afterwards. Now, this afterwards is a question, because when you want, you are thinking about a child, it's not like kun fayakun. Mm-hmm. That is for Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Yes.
It's not up to a human being. And now when you decide that now you want to have a child, you see now you cannot have a child, because there is the causes do not relate for you to have a child. Maybe now you have a problem. Maybe the wife has a problem or something. The causes do not come together to cause the effect of having a child. And because of that, you see that the Islamic Ummah is reducing in quantity. So that people that we want to be able to be in the part of the ministry of Imam, they need to be born, they need to be progressed, they need to work on their knowledge, they need to work on their activities. You see, we have a lot of sections. So for example, right now in Islam, we have mujtahid, we have marajas, we have muballighs,
yes.
We have sukhanran, we have
orators. That's right.
But everyone has, even though their roles are different, you will see that all of them require to be together.
Mm-hmm.
All of them require to be together to be able to complete this mission of Islam to the world.
That's all right.
IRIB English Radio presents Questions and Answers on Islamic Beliefs. Answering your theological questions in Questions and Answers on Islamic Beliefs. Send us your questions to EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
When we get to the duties of the Muslims regarding Imam As, what are the main duties of the people? Because during Ghaiba, there are some duties on the people. And if Imam reappears, what about the duties of the people on that time?
So we have seen in a lot of contrast that when a person, in regards to the reappearance of the Imam again, as I said, that people do a lot of mistakes that have happened in the history. So if you see that when the Holy Prophet was in this world, it was only after a certain age that he came out to do tabligh of deen, to spread the religion of Islam, to introduce Islam to be the truth. And if you see the Prophet, the moment that he started doing this and narrating Islam or bringing Islam to the people, showing Islam to the people, it was not from his birth.
Mm-hmm.
So that period that he was born, till the period that he started doing tabligh, you could call that small portion as a ghaiba.
Yes.
You see, in the contrast, where we say that he was among the people, but nobody knew him,
mm-hmm.
that he was the Prophet of Allah. You see, it's only when the causes and effects for him to be able to propagate safely, properly, without any issues, he need Amirul Mumineen's existence, Bibi Khadija's being there, and a lot of things. Because they were there, the Prophet existed with his mission and started to propagate the religion. Another instance why Imam is not coming before we go to the duties of the Muslim is the ghaiba of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. When I say ghaiba, I don't mean the occultation that we are used to, not being there, but not being physically present at that city. So for the people of Kufa, they knew the Imam is there in Medina, in Makkah, and they wrote him letter.
Mm-hmm.
You see, the Imam was ghaib, away from their sight.
Yes.
They wrote him letters. You see, like the way we recite Dua Ahad, we recite the Dua for his reappearance. Yes. They wrote the similar words for Imam Hussein to come. But the moment Imam Hussein made an intention to come, what did they do? They were the main reasons for him to be killed. So if you bring that to the ghaiba of Imam As, you can see the same progress. A lot of us do dua, but we are not trying to learn from history. We do not know history. A lot of Muslims today, they do not know history and learn from the lessons of history. Where Allah also tells us, the Holy Prophet tells us, learn from the mistakes of the past. Mm-hmm. For you are supposed to be a great nation.
Mm-hmm.
Like for the zuhur of Imam, if we are not ready, we cannot survive his coming. You see? And that's why we need to learn from those mistakes. What happened in the time of Imam Hussein in Kufa, that people actually became the killers of Imam Hussein. So why? They were scared. So what do you need to be? What is the opposite of being scared? Being brave, shuja. Are we instilling our kids ourselves? Now this is where we are talking about what should we do? Do we have this installation of braveness in us and our kids, that tomorrow if zulm happens, then we are ready to stand against zulm? Today, you see, the whole Arab world is not speaking, not taking any action against what is happening in Palestine.
Mm-hmm.
You see?
Yes.
And this may be one of the reasons that if this is happening, then what will happen with Imam Asr alayhi salam today would be the same fate what happened to Hazrat Muslim ibn Aqil. You see, he would come, he would have a lot of people. Same thing that happened to Prophet Isa alayhi salam.
Mm-hmm.
You see, he came, he showed the people the right path. But the moment that they were ready, they left him. You see, and that ended up for, according to what was narrated in the Bible, and think that he was crucified. If Jesus was in this world, in Quran we say that Allah brought him up. He didn't accept the Prophet to be oppressed in that manner. He brought Jesus to himself, Isa to himself, you see. But he doesn't want to do the same with Mahdi. He wants to send Mahdi so that the world is filled with justice. And when will that happen? These occurrences that happened in the past has no chance of happening when Imam arrives. So what we need to do, we need to be brave. The brave need to be powerful. The brave need to be taking positions in different countries, in different places, to be able to invite Imam and be ready to work on it, so that there is nothing that would drop them away from the path of Imam alayhi salam.
That's right. Thank you very much, Sheikh and Brother Suhail, for a nice elaboration regarding the concept of the reappearance of Imam. Asked what are our duties and what are the barriers. It was very kind of you. And thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. The another episode. God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
Inna fi al-jannati nahran li Ali wa Hussein wa Hassan. لعلي وحسين وحسان إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسان لعلي وحسين وحسان كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن
يدخل الجنة من غير حزان إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن.
Welcome to our program, Israel Watch. Today, we will touch upon failure sustained by the Israeli army at the hands of the Palestinian resistance fighters, particularly in the neighborhood of Al-Shujaya in the Gaza Strip. The failures have reinforced Israeli fears of another defeat, similar to Israel's defeat in the 2006 war in Lebanon. That also comes amid growing protests by the families of the Israeli captives, who are pushing for the resumption of negotiations aimed to secure the release of the captives. We're joined by Mr. Ali Haider, an expert in Israeli affairs, to discuss these issues. Welcome to our program, Mr. Ali Haider. We will begin with the issue of the Israeli captives held by the Palestinian factions in the Gaza Strip. Mr. Ali Haider, what's the impact of such a video on the people in the Israeli entity and on the families of the captives?
In the name of God, the merciful, the compassionate. Actually, the issue of the captives is one of the most important challenges that the Israeli leadership faces, as it contradicts the regime's determination to continue with the war to achieve its declared goals. But the issue of the captives, given their numbers and their identity, and the circumstances in which they were captured, as well as the ensuing incidents, is one of the most important bargaining chips used by Hamas and other resistance factions. Thus, the Israeli leadership has tried to limit the effect of such videos through banning the Israeli TV stations from broadcasting them. But to no avail, as they still can be watched on social media platforms that they can't censor. So that video and such interviews will have a great impact on the Israelis and the families of the captives, especially after it's emerged that there is a big crack in the Israeli society, which is divided into people who support the continuation of the war and those who call for securing the release of the captives. But the dangerous issue for the Israeli leadership is that the resistance's demands are not confined to prisoner exchange. The Palestinians want a comprehensive agreement that puts an end to the war. So when the captives and their families push for negotiations at any price, then they are somehow pushing for an end to the war, regardless of their intentions, because the resistance can link the release of the captives to the end of the war and not just prisoner exchange.
In the same context, the anger of the captives' family at the Israeli leaders has grown after the Israeli troops killed three Israeli captives in the Gaza Strip. The killing of the three captives at the hands of the Israeli army has raised many comments from angry Israeli social media users.
Galit.
A disaster follows a disaster. They are all unnecessary.
Idi.
That wouldn't even be accepted as a script for a fictional film. It's simply another big failure of the Israeli army.
Ditsa.
It's a big shame. They took off their T-shirts to show them that they're not armed. They also raised a piece of white cloth. They'd been captives for 70 days, and that's how they were killed.
Sam.
Our army will kill all the captives. That's a catastrophe.
Manchi.
It's a horrible tragedy.
Mr. Ali Haider, to what extent has the murder of the three Israeli captives destroyed the Israelis' trust in their army and in their ability to achieve their stated goal of releasing the captives by force?
Actually, that incident has a great impact on the Israeli public and the political and military leaderships of Israel, to the extent that it pushes its political leadership to soften its stance on negotiations aimed at securing the release of the captives, after Netanyahu had initially instructed Mossad chief not to respond to any calls for negotiations. But after that incident, he was forced to change his instructions to contain that public anger. Even at the level of the army, the military's chief of staff, Herzi Halevi, took responsibility for the incident. But they are just words and lead nowhere. Let's suppose that they were not Israelis. And they were taking off their shirts and carrying a white flag. Then the troops should have detained them. the detention would have even helped the army to receive information from them. Thus, the incident reflects the level of stress on the soldiers in the field and the state of confusion in the field. It seems that soldiers are instructed to kill any moving thing, and they have not imagined that a number of captives would manage to do what they did. Anyway, that incident constituted a main motivation for the captives' families. The regime's army troops were portrayed as killers of their own captives, as if it was a deliberate incident. But that was just a part of a psychological campaign on Israel's military and political leadership.
The families of the captives have escalated their protest after the regime has failed to make good on their promise to release them by force, and they're now planning to intensify sit-ins in the occupied Al-Quds. We've observed increasing calls for the resumption of negotiations to secure the release of the Israeli captives held by the resistance. The captives' families say the captives must return alive and not in coffins, as has happened before. The demands for the captives' release also rose after the Israeli soldiers killed three of the captives in Al-Shajir. Mr. Ali Haider, how effective will the protests of the captives' family be amid the failure of the regime to release them?
Considering the level of support of the Israeli public for the captives' families, we can say it so far can't have a great impact, as the majority of the Israeli public supports the continuation of the war, but at the same time supports the release of the captives. It is so difficult to strike a balance between the two issues. So the Israeli leadership must choose its priority, and it has already announced that the national security of Israel has priority over the release of the captives, unlike the slogans it repeats. What we have seen on the monitor shows the division between two groups. A group that prioritizes supporting the army and a group that prioritizes the release of the captives. It's worth noting that the TV station that aired that report that addresses the issue of the captives and the importance of their release chose a pro-army protest to appear behind the anchor instead. That's absolutely part of the media campaign that supports the political leadership's stance on the war.
The Israeli army's failures in Gaza have gained attention of Israeli media, particularly after the Israeli army announced the discovery of the first tunnel following more than 70 days of the regime's aggression on Gaza and after the defeat of Golani in Al-Shajayah. Those failures and the video of the tunnel that was released by the Israeli army have raised many comments from Israeli social media users. Let's see some of them.
Amir.
Where was the intelligence agency and where was the regime? Who knows what surprises await us in Gaza?
Mikhail.
A trash intelligence agency. They must be imprisoned.
Yuaf.
A first-class intelligence failure. For years, they boasted about the intelligence agencies. Those agencies aren't worth a penny.
Israel.
In the north, there are dozens of that.
Mr. Ali Haider, what's your take on the Israeli army's announcement of discovering a tunnel after more than 70 days, given that the discovery raised mocking comments from Israelis on social media platforms, with many considering it as another evidence of Israel's intelligence failure?
Firstly, this tunnel is close to the borders of the Gaza Strip. So the first failure, sustained by the political leadership, was that it failed to be aware of the digging of a tunnel of that size. Secondly, it discovered the tunnel too late, as the resistance fighters had already used it in the Operation Al-Aqsa Flood. Thirdly, it discovered it after more than 70 days of the start of the war. Therefore, we can understand why the generals, including the former commander of the Central Command, are asserting that what the Israeli army faces is a very complex and difficult battle. Israel may have got involved in a ground operation, but it can end up sinking in a swamp.
Despite the massacres and the shows of strength by the Israeli leaders at news conferences, the resistance in the Gaza Strip, according to former Israeli official, is still strong and capable, and the Israeli army has failed to eliminate it. Moshe Yaalon, one of the former Israeli ministers of military affairs, also described the U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza as so difficult for the Israeli army. then the Israeli leaders have acknowledged that the military system of the resistance in the Gaza Strip is very strong.
Since the beginning, they have known that the military system of Hamas is strong, and that's why they refrained from trying to storm the Gaza Strip during the past years. But what's new is that they have recognized that it is stronger than they thought. That might, that military power, was not created within a couple of days, but that was a result of reinforcement and accumulation of capabilities, equipment, and expertise over years. Here, Moshe Yalon, who is almost the former chief of staff of the Israeli army, I referred to his previous experience. From his military experience, he noted that urban, overcrowded areas constitute an obstacle to the army where the resistance fighters can easily catch the soldiers and target their tanks, as we can now see in the Gaza Strip. Thus, the criterion is not the army's ability to enter a neighborhood, but is whether it managed to take control of that neighborhood, above the ground and under the ground. That's the measure, as the army's storming of a neighborhood can constitute a trap, and that's what's happening now. The Israelis don't hesitate to announce that they have imposed a complete siege of Gaza as part of their pressure strategy, cutting off water, fuel, and food amid U.S. support. They resort to that policy because of their failure to confront the military power of the resistance.
Israel is concerned that Gaza will turn into another Lebanon and that it will be defeated in the Strip, as was the case in the 2006 war in Lebanon. Amid concerns of a Lebanon 2 scenario, Netanyahu has flexed his muscles and made new threats to Hezbollah, threatening to push Hezbollah away from the border by force or diplomacy. Netanyahu's threats to Hezbollah comes while a former official in Israel's National Security Council has stressed that it's difficult to push al-Ridwan force away from the borders and that the matter requires a military action. Mr. Ali Haider, what do you think about the threats that were made by Netanyahu and Israeli officials to push Hezbollah away from the borders, especially that has apparently become a new goal of the regime that is added to the declared goals of the U.S.-Israeli genocide on Gaza?
Actually, raising this issue at this time shows the extent of pressure exerted by the resistance on Israel. Netanyahu referred to part of the pressure when he talked about tens of thousands of settlers who have left the settlements near Lebanon amid fears of attacks by Hezbollah. But as the former deputy head of the National Security Council said, these remarks are almost impossible to achieve because Hezbollah members and al-Ridwan fighters are the residents of those villages, and they have means of warfare in their possession there. Israel has got into a trouble as it was forced to make promises that are unachievable amid the pressure it faces in the field. So it resorts to the U.S. in the hope that Washington will manage to come up with a solution. But after the diplomatic efforts fail, Israel will find itself facing a different reality.
Thank you, Mr. Ali Haider, an expert in Israeli affairs, for joining us on this episode of Israel Watch. And thank you. Goodbye.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, you are listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. In this program, we are going to look at some principles of upbringing children so that the audience gets a detailed description of the matter concerning how to raise their children Islamically. And today we have in our studio guest speaker Sister Salma Khalfan, who is an Islamic researcher in the Hawza Ilmiya of Qom. Assalamu alaikum and welcome to the program, Sister Salma.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you so much for inviting me over.
It's very nice to have you again. And we were discussing about a question where a person had asked that an 11-year-old doesn't like studying and they have to always force them to study and this leads to arguments, so how to avoid them. And then you were explaining to us, you know, how a child can be motivated in studying, and you say that sometimes we tend to straight away resort to giving gifts, which kind of defeats the purpose because we want their goal to be getting more knowledge. And you also said that to create this love for studying, you should give a good atmosphere, make it inviting. You say the parents should also be studious so that the child should feel like studying. So all of these very, very interesting points.
Yeah. Reading is something, a skill that we should never stop, you know, encouraging a child.
Yeah.
And it starts with a person reading themselves.
True.
So
true.
If they read, the children will feel like reading. And we see all parents who read a lot, the children love books. It's just, you know, like it's something that kind of, you know, gets to someone so easily. When they see their peers doing it or when they see their parents doing it, they also feel that what they are missing, you know. So reading skill is very important. And also story, telling them a story or telling them to read out aloud for you. For example, in homework, you know, you can make it so interesting to tell them that just read out your science work for me loudly. I want to see what you learned today. And I want to also feel that what I don't know,
yeah,
you know, make them enjoy the process that, you know, you can also not know.
Yeah.
It's not as if you know everything. You're the ruler here. So tell them to teach you as a teaching skill. See that what kind of skills they have apart from that, you know, how much have they retained in the class, what they learned. So in this way, he will explain you that this is what they learned and this is, you know, what to do and things like that. And the questions, and then try to solve the questions, you know, like just think about it. And of course, he should be mainly, or she should be mainly doing the homework themselves, but make it interesting for them that study is an enjoyment.
Yeah.
It's not something that is hard and fast rule that you have to do and get over with, you know. It's something that really needs to be digested and something that is a fun activity.
I think it's very hard to like keep a fine line between, you know, you doing it and kind of feeling pressured about it, because sometimes the child feels like, okay, you know, it's too much pressure, but sometimes we leave it too easily for them and say, yeah, yeah, don't worry. So
yeah,
how to kind of make it balanced that,
okay,
it shouldn't be pressuring, it should also
right,
not be too flexible.
First of all, be aware. The parents should be aware that this needs to be done, and then think about how to do it.
Okay.
Not being pressured inside, even for a parent. Being very cool and calm and collected. Knowing the fact that at the end of the day, even if it doesn't or something is missed, it's not a big, very big deal that, you know, like it needs to be compensated for the next day or something like that. You know, it has to be done, or before that, you know, he can't go to school. No, it can be compensated for. It's not something that, you know, if the child is sick, for example, of course, you need to let the child rest, yeah?
True.
So the parent itself, himself or herself, should be very calm and collected and aware at the same time that what am I doing, you know? And the child will get those waves,
very
you
true,
know, those vibes.
Vibes,
yeah?
Yeah?
That this is, you know, this is something that is fun.
True.
And really the parent should feel up to it, not as if pretend.
Exactly, yeah.
So he should be a real parent, right?
Very true. So we'll just stop for a short break and inshallah we will continue after it.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, dear audience, to IRIB English Radio, broadcasting from Iran, and this is Islamic Upbringing. we were discussing about, you know, how to create this atmosphere so the child feels like studying. Do you have anything to add?
Yes, a lot. Another point is that have open and sincere communication with the child. You know, sometimes the child really feels like, we all have ups and downs. They feel tired. They feel that they have a rough day in school, so they don't feel like studying, or, you know, things like that. When they are up to it after a short break, you know, after coming to from school and resting and everything, and then they're supposed to study, maybe even for one and a half hour. It shouldn't be too long. Normally, children are not pressurized. Even it's not advisable to pressurize children after a long day of school to be given piles of homeworks.
True.
But at least like a 1 hour homework is okay, right?
Yeah.
In so many hours that are left.
They should feel responsible then.
Yeah, they should feel that, you know, we shouldn't let go all the knowledge that we learned to waste.
True.
Right? And even the parents should acknowledge what they learned, right? So that to help them come through the year and get good, you know, like good grades and, you know, develop in their knowledge.
Understand.
Yeah, understand exactly the what they have learned. So encourage the child to express what they feel about education. Don't be scared. You know, if the child doesn't want to, for example, learn a certain subject, don't feel scared that, no, you have to learn it. It's bad, you know, you'll fail, or people look, they're all learning, and that's how you get, you know, like you get a good career in future, or you get more knowledge, or it'll really help you, or you start advising and things like that. Instead of just telling the child probably that, why do you feel like this today? You don't feel like studying? Have you thought about how useful this is? Imagine this, you know, you can, so much creativity is needed for a mother, especially, I believe,
yeah,
if they really want to, and they can do it. It's within the capability of a mother to encourage a child in such a way that they feel happy now that they want to begin their subject, okay?
True.
But why do you feel, what do you feel about maths, for example? So the child might say that math is so hard, I don't even understand the story problems of math. So you can say that, let's do some, for example, the brain waves, okay? And then you tell one very easy one that he's able to answer or she's able to answer, and keep on. And then, you know, ask them, invite them that you can ask me also. So they feel they know, you see?
Yeah.
Discuss that openly. Why do you not like math? Okay, I don't like it because of the teacher. Then you can, you know, do something about it, right? Or I don't like it because so much homework is given to. Then you can also tell the teacher that, maybe give them in portions, homework in portions. Or maybe read their homework aloud. Or maybe keep a very good tutor for the child. Or maybe you yourself can be the tutor. So, you know, when the child expresses the problems, then you know what is the problems of study. Maybe they say that, I'm not interested in, for example, science.
Yeah.
So what are you interested in then? Okay, I'm interested in geography. Oh, great. Geography is a lot of even scientific concepts, you know. And then say that, let's work in geography more now, you know,
yeah.
And make him his mood strong, and say that science even is a part of the subject that we have to learn in life. Even you can give him examples of how science, you know, helps us in every way. Like, for example, as far as diet is concerned, we need to know what are proteins, carbohydrates, and the calories and energy that we get. And you know what? A clever parent is also one who turns it into an ibadah. For example, remembers God in the process, that,
yeah,
who has created all this. And the child will really feel that there's a communication between the parents and the child. Because the child feels lonely. Sometimes he feels that, I'm doing my homework alone. And, you know, this, it's not interesting. But when the parent is involved and making it interesting for the child, it's very less likely that the child would not feel like doing homework. Even writing in the board, whiteboard, showing it with examples, making it fun, you know, giving stickers to the child,
yeah,
things like that, you know, small, you know, like rewards. It's very good in that way, that the child feels encouraged to. He knows that he has an open communication with you. It's not hiding something, that I don't like this, but I'm doing it by force.
So thank you very much. We're going to take a short break, inshallah, and continue with another topic after the break. Audience, please stay tuned.
يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي الخيرات.
The Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam said, honor your children and teach them good manners.
يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي الخيرات.
Welcome back, dear audience, to IRIB English Radio, and this is Islamic Upbringing. This kind of relation is so important, and I also feel that at times when we were young, we used to love playing, you know, teacher, where, okay, we have to be the teacher and we have to try and teach our parents or we have to try and teach our older sisters, they would kind of create this space where we would feel more encouraged to do what we don't want to do generally. But because of that, you know, encouraging situation, and at times I feel like we usually don't take this encouraging path. Yeah, we usually say, oh, you know, you can't do this, why are you not able to do this, you know, you lack in this.
We discourage
and I feel like this encouraging path is so empowering. You feel like, you know, you can do this. So
yeah,
this is
that's
very
right.
True.
So it's very important to make it very lighthearted, make the communication part stronger between a parent and a child, so that the child gets instilled in him that studying is something fun and important. Studying is not something like something that needs to be the last or a pressure. Studying is something that is very beautiful. You know, when you gain knowledge, how beautiful it is.
Yeah.
Even now, when we gain something new, a knowledge, we feel very good about it. It's something that is maybe indescribable. You know, knowledge is something that you get thirsty, and when you attain it, you want to know more. And that's something that is very much encouraged by Allah. To gain knowledge, Rabbi Zidni Ilma, the Holy Prophet also says. So it's something that really feels, comes with satisfaction.
True. And what about like having a role model? Sometimes I feel when we look at somebody, we look up at somebody and we see they are doing, you know, they've reached so high because of how studious they were, they worked hard. I feel like that also really encourages people.
That's true. That's perfectly good to do. For example, at the process of, for example, teaching, you can't talk about these role models like advising them, you know. But apart from that, maybe story time or something when you tell them, when they're young children, adolescent children, you can, you know, give them a book to read about, for example, how the great ulama were, small stories about them, or shuhada, how they were, you know, reading books and reading some material that really, you know, make them progress in their life. So that's good. But at the time of studying, if you point out at them, they'll feel that now it's a nagging thing, you know.
True.
That if they were there, who am I? Like, okay, now I have to hear all this. At that time, you should create it very light and, you know, able to communicate and a fun and a game and a challenge.
True, so very true.
Involve the child.
So that's very interesting. Very true, like, I feel at times we kind of go on telling a child, you know, you have to do this, you have to be like this. And like you said, it's very important to choose a correct time, you know, when you're telling a story, kind of make them look up to some people who have those qualities, and that will make them want to be like those people naturally, you know,
yeah,
without enforcing it into
exactly,
them.
Exactly.
Yeah. So that was very good. So inshallah, we hope to continue this discussion if you have more interesting points. But unfortunately, that's all the time that we have. And we will continue this, inshallah, in the next episode. Dear audience, thank you very much for joining us on the program. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, please contact us at our email, englishradio@irib.ir, and visit us at our website, parstoday.ir. Inshallah, until the next program, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returns upon rest. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way. Islam solves all of our problems. Allah leaves no stone unturned. Perfect with no flaws at all are the laws of Allah. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way.
Everyone has a beloved, a new dear friend. But I have you, my dear. May God protect you, my dear. May God protect you. Thank you.
IRIB English Radio, for those who seek the truth.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. Islamidi. Allah my Lord. His word Quran. Muhammad Prophet. Praise be upon. I am Muslim for all of time.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners from all around the world. This is IRIB English Radio and welcome back to your station. I am Bita and here
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. I'm Hassanain. Assalamu alaikum, sister.
Assalamu alaikum, my brother. And we're going to talk about a new topic. As you know, from the moment that we wake up and we open our eyes in the morning, we are making thousands of decisions, like what to eat, what to wear, what to do, and
so on. I know, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And decision-making actually is...
Sometimes it kind of becomes hard, like what to decide.
It is really hard, even about the tiniest things. Yeah, like
especially when there are many choices.
Exactly. And, you know, as a youth, I think we have so many big choices that we have to make, like the marriage, like study, education, job, and so many other things. So the question here is, what is the biggest decision that we make?
Like, for example, just as you mentioned, different things like marriage and studies and all. So I guess like all these things do not come at the same time, right?
Yeah.
So I feel each and every situation has got the best and the big decision for its own time.
Yeah, I get it.
Like, for example, you know, I'm studying, I finished my school. Now my biggest decision is choosing the right college.
Yeah.
Like, what subject should I choose?
Yeah, so you mean that in every specific time, there is the specific biggest decision that we are
making. Accordingly, yeah.
Yeah. And, but you know, there is one little thing, one thing that, for example, for the whole of your life is the most important one. Do you think, is there even any thing like that or not?
Out of all these decisions, like, the most important one, like, what's the goal of my life? What am I going to do in future? Like, what's my purpose?
Yeah.
So this, I guess, and this decision, like under this decision, like what you're going to do or what's the goal of your life, with the answer of this decision, like you shape your life.
Yeah, exactly. So I think this is one of the most important questions that we ask from ourselves.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
So welcome back, dear listeners. We're here again next to you and talking about the biggest decision.
Yeah, and I was asking the sister about the biggest decision of youth.
You know, I think the biggest decision actually is related to the future, the thing that you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a big part of everybody's life is thinking about the future of that person,
mm-hmm.
The goal of the relationship that I'm making in my life and according to my afterlife, what am I doing, okay? And one of the things that I was dealing with as one of the decisions maybe or one of the challenges of my life was the connection that I have with Allah Almighty.
Mm-hmm.
It was so perplexing and challenging for me, you know, because first of all, I needed a kind of clear picture of myself and my potential capacities and so many other things. And then I had to know my Lord, okay? Mm-hmm. And this challenge was one of the decisions that I had to make in order to do it. I also have, for example, so many difficult decisions like what major should I study in the university and whether I go to university or work or these kind of questions. You know, the problem is the choices are so variable. And when you have a lot of choices, then decision-making is a really difficult task.
Okay, if I, sister, if I ask you this way, like while making a decision, should it be our like whole and soul, it should be our decision, or like we should ask someone like who is experienced, like what should we select, or what should we opt for?
What do you think about this? Consulting other people is really important, you know, because you can use their experiences. For example, think of someone who is like 50 or 60 years old. For sure, she or he has so many experiences that I don't have. But, you know, I think the youth generation of the modern time are so rebel and, you know, they feel like they have to do something in order to experience it. You cannot listen it from other people and just make it practically in your own life. You have to do it yourself. Yeah. And if for a short time, it was like that. I felt like I have to do anything myself. And it has its own consequences. It takes a lot of time. It has so many harms and so other things. So I came to this end point that I have to consult other people. Yeah. And it doesn't mean that I am weak or I cannot
because they have gone through the things that, well, we are starting the path of which,
Yeah, and how about you? Whenever coming to these situations in life that you have to make a big decision, what is your strategy?
What I think is I have elder brothers, right? So I'm the youngest of my family. So, you know, before doing anything, like either I ask my brothers or I ask someone like who has done this thing before.
Yeah.
Like especially like for choosing a major in my college, in my university. You know, what subject and what can I get from this? I don't know, right? You know, I'm starting to just, you know, take the first step in my life.
Exactly.
Like in this field. So I just prefer consulting someone who has already experienced it.
It's a nice choice because, you know, someone told me, do you like your profession? I mean, I'm studying medicine and he asked me, do you like medical things and so on? I told him that I didn't went through that, okay? I didn't go through this and I have no knowledge what it would be like to actually study medicine. And because of that, I asked other people whether they like it or not. And the answer is my answer. Okay. And I think this is something natural for every one of us because we live only once in this world and we have limited time.
Sister, one more thing which is concerning over here is like what people do, like whatever people work. It's not every time that, you know, necessarily that they have decided to do this. Or they have chosen to do this.
Yeah.
Sometimes, like, you know, it's their decisions were something else, but they were forced to do this.
I know. I know there are so many difficult situations that you are in a kind of environmental phase that other things will actually affect your choices. For example, I don't know an example right now, but I feel the question. I know that. And I think there is nothing we can do in this kind of situations, but to try to take control over the situation. Okay, which is not something easy. You have to understand that, okay, if you were born in a poor family, it wasn't your fault, it wasn't your decision. But that, you know, famous sentence that if you die poor, then it is your decision.
Yeah, it's your problem. Yeah, it's your decision. You could have worked hard and you would have overcome the other decisions, you know, other people forcing upon you.
Yeah.
And sometimes it happens, look, I want to do something. And this is, you know, this leads to the youth. This leads to people thinking that I don't have any rights. I don't have anything to choose on myself. Like, for example, I guess there's some countries and there's a culture that the young or youth are supposed to do whatever their elders say.
Yeah.
So this makes them feel like we don't have any choice. We don't have any freedom.
It's not like that. And even
this happens in some places.
Yeah, yeah, I know. Even in my country, you know, it's like every child should actually study like medicine or engineering and you can do nothing about it. This is the atmosphere that exists in the society. So let's keep our conversation here. We're going to go for a short break and we're going to come back in a heartbeat.
Welcome back, dear listeners. And before the break, we were discussing people being forced into different occupations or different situations, like where they feel that they have not chosen this for themselves, but they are being forced to. So I guess over here, sometimes what happens is, you know, in some places, as I mentioned, like in some cultures, you know, I'm not supposed to do whatever I feel like doing. You know, I'm not supposed to, like, you know, if I like science, but I'm supposed to do whatever my parents say, whatever my elders say. You know, it happens in some countries.
Yeah.
You're forced into some field, although you don't want to do it. This has become a custom in some places, but not necessarily everywhere. It's got the bad side. Some places, you know, the elders choose for the young ones whatever is best for them.
Yeah.
And many times it happens that, you know, the young or the youth are not aware of the benefits of their decisions.
I know, exactly. This is the thing that happened to me, myself, as to some extent I was forced to my field, but after studying it, after going through the university and so on, I just get to know that it's something beneficial for me. It was the best choice in this situation. And because of that, I think to some extent, you have to fight for your own decisions, but sometimes you can let it go. And you can trust elders of your family, of your society, and so on. And it doesn't mean that you are, I don't know, being somehow ignorant or something to your life. No, it is the best choice itself to keep quiet sometimes.
Sometimes we are not aware of, you know, what the elders are aware of. But many times it happens, you know, it's literally force. So, you know, many people actually ask this as well.
Yeah.
You know, my parents are not letting me do this. I want to do this.
You feel like everybody wants you to do something. Everybody's oppressing you. Everybody is sacrificing you for their own will. But it's not like that. Sometimes people are trying to help you. And you have to think under suggestion before actually acting, before fighting with them, or before doing anything aggressively. Just keep it calm and think. So how about you, my dear brother? Do you have any suggestion for parents or youth?
First of all, I feel like, you know, the parents shouldn't be, you know, dictators in, you know, upbringing their children. Like, they shouldn't force whatever they think. You know, of course, like, you know, after reaching to a point that, you know, there's no better option than what they have suggested, then that's a different thing.
Yeah.
Because many times, as we mentioned, children are not aware of the outcome. So they should also look into the need or the requirement or the choice of their children. So here, like, you know, when this happens that, you know, you want something and your parents want something opposite, what you can do is, like, first of all, if you, whatever you want, if it's actually good.
Yeah.
If it's actually good, you can sit and talk to your parents. You can talk to your parents and you can tell them the benefits of it. You can tell them, you know, I like this. Like, these are the reasons. You can get reasoning.
Yeah, the best method, I think.
Okay, yeah. And you can get the reasoning and you can get someone else, you know, some other elder and, you know, have them to talk with them.
Yeah, this one would work too.
Yeah, if you go, like, in a proper way and, you're like, in the beginning, if you start, like, arguing with your parents, like, you know, I don't want to do this.
Shall
you know, this
we?
Is what I have decided. If you opt this way, then, of course, it's going to make the things worse.
Yeah, it's not going to work.
So if you go the smooth way, you explain to them, like, oh, why have you chosen this? Like, you like this, and what are the reasons, and why is it good for you? And you get someone else, some other elder as well. So to have them explain to them. So then there are chances that, you know, they agree to you as well.
There are times in everybody's life that we face difficult choices that we have to decide among them. And there are times that even you don't have any choice to decide and your decision is somehow forced on you. So in both, I think, categories of situations, you have to keep calm, you have to think and consider all the opportunities, benefits, pros and cons of all the things that are happening and then decide the best way for your life. So I think it was all the time we had for today's episode. Thank you for listening to us.
That's it for today. And with that being said, wassalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
I will tell you, dear youth, that the future belongs to you. By Allah's favor, you, dear youth, will see that day
and you will hand down your sources of pride to the future generations. Greetings be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings.
And inshallah, we will continue talking about
this. We'll discuss that inshallah in the next session. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Rabbil alameen. And don't go away.
We will continue this very essential.